So Andrew, Professor of Sociology, is looking at social media and human rights.
Jim and Wendy, of course, set this up perfectly for the segue into what I'm going to now present, carefully identifying all the issues which we now come up with solutions for. What I want to report today is a project which has been created by an NGO. It's an NGO called the Institute for Cultural Diversity, which was created over a period of about 4 years following increasing distress during the Howard years over the whole question of the government's failure to engage with issues of cultural diversity. There was a first meeting back in 2006 of a whole series of stakeholders from academic and other institutions, and the NGO itself was established in 2007, and in conjunction with the Australian Human Rights Commission and with Attorney General's Department, it moved to create an online electronic environment for explorations and discussions around issues to do with cultural diversity and human rights. It was all taking place during a period of very rapid expansion of social media, and people were aware of all this stuff. The critical dimension of social media, as we understand it, is user-generated content. And all the issues that that Jim referred to about the relationship between citizens and government played into this conversation. Again, I don't want to go into the technology of it, but it's quite clear that Web 2.0 provides opportunities for engagement that only require some idea of why you want to use them. And there's a lot of interesting debates about how those usages actually appear. Hashtag, which is an American sort of clearinghouse of information around humanities, arts, and science and technology, what they call an advanced collaboratory, I can't even pronounce it, collaboratory, which has essentially been built by the University of California system, has a particular area of concern around social media and human rights, which they've been exploring, and it's a very interesting portal because it looks at the way in which social media and human rights questions, including the civil rights that Jim referred to, and indeed the human rights that Wendy referred to, can actually be advanced through the use of these sorts of technological environments, if you can get to them. And I think Wendy's point is absolutely right, that there are significant constraints about these sorts of issues, particularly when governments are very au fait with what's going on and try and make sure that people can't get access to the technology and the communication framework. So it's a sort of a continuing struggle. The Center for Social Media at the American University has done a lot of research in this area, particularly looking at the social media infrastructure and the way they can use it to engage publics in various sorts of ways. They've got two projects which are really quite interesting ones. One is around the use of Twitter in political organising, and the other is around issues to do with the inauguration in the United States and the way in which the inauguration was experienced through new media right across the states. But we're starting to see some of this stuff, as Jim suggested, really starting to come together. The Canadian government has just announced the establishment of a virtual museum of human rights in Winnipeg, which is going to be a museum without artefacts. So it's going to be a totally electronic, ideas-based environment, which is going to be national, in fact international. The European Community has just set up a centre at Wergeland, in Norway, which is specifically directed towards the use of social media in social change and social action. In education and various areas around that. And at the heart of this stuff is the relationship between community development approaches, which have been very well established over many years, and an understanding of the creativity involved in knowledge architecture. And it's a very, very fascinating area of research, a very fascinating area of creativity. So I want to deal now specifically in the few minutes I've got with this particular project. I've indicated that it grew out of a since right across civil society and in academia, with immense frustration with the Howard years, there was a desire to create an environment where people could continue to do their own thing, but which would facilitate communication. It's been accelerated by the sense that the current government is also particularly inactive around cultural diversity issues. And there was also a concern that the previous government's model, which has been carried on by the current government, was to see the problem primarily in terms of the Muslim problem, rather than looking at issues to do with intercultural relations, which have been, in a sense, or intercommunal relations. So these sorts of factors were sort of bubbling around. The Institute, as it emerged, began to think about how it might carry out its strategies. There was a widespread awareness in the group about new media. One of the players in it had worked for Social Change Online and had been a Greens politician and made widespread use of the emergent infrastructure. We were also concerned that there were not only no new media sites, but in fact no media sites in Australia that allowed for intersectoral communication and conversations around cultural diversity. You had particular organisations like the Federation of Ethnic Communities Councils and so on, but there was nowhere that groups could move outside their own group structures and engage with each other and actually build bridges. And through that, you also had this emergence of open source software, the growth of social informatics, and this huge development of the democratic user or the democratic producer community internationally working together to produce solutions to these sorts of communication problems. And this opened up all sorts of possibilities of partnership, exactly because government was already finding it extremely difficult to work out how to work with these issues. The Human Rights Commission, for instance, wanted to stimulate all sorts of discussions but didn't want to have its brand on it. It wanted to be able to step back and see those discussions without having to accept responsibility for them. And there were many people in various communities who were very interested in having conversations which couldn't take place in the mainstream media, because the mainstream media was not interested, government wasn't prepared to facilitate, and there was nowhere else for this sort of stuff to happen. So, is this going to work? Yes. So the capacity for this emerged through the National Action Plan, which is a fairly bizarre place for these resources to come from. The National Action Plan arose in Australia in the wake of the London bombings in 2005. The government that of the day decided that Muslims were a serious problem. We needed a national action plan to incorporate them into the mainstream of Australian life. Or actually what we needed was a strategy to identify anyone who wanted to blow up an AFL grand final. And at the same time, we ought to try and do something about these people who might feel slightly marginalised by practices of a wider Australian society. So the National Action Plan was established, and the Human Rights Commission got some of this money to deal with issues around human rights and Muslim communities. And the Human Rights Commission, amongst many other projects, had wanted to set up a dialogue, but it had been through the face-to-face dialogue story. It in fact had said, look, every time we talk to the same people we want to talk to don't come, young people won't talk to us. We always get, every time we have a meeting, we get overwhelmed by the same people running their own agendas. We don't really have a sense of what's going out there, which is, you know, that's not mediated through organisations that are already established. We think the web might do it, but we don't want to do it because we have all sorts of problems about the politics of that and so on. And we also want to build bridging relationships between Muslim communities and other communities, and we want to take human rights questions as communities see them and see what the implications of that is for us. And we also, and this was coming from young people in Muslim communities who we've been talking to, or they've been talking to, we really need safe places to have difficult discussions. This was a really important part of it. We want to have places where we can communicate with each other, where we won't get flamed, won't get reported to the media, the Daily Telegraph won't be in there blasting us all over the place, and we can really have detailed discussions, and we're not going to be captured by any particular political or ideological or religious group when we have them. So this was a big call. So what came out of this was the creation of a project called Cultural Diversity Net. I'll just get this as always. Okay. Cultural Diversity .net is currently in a pilot frame, and it's designed to engage with various communities around a whole series of issues. And Caius Almomini, who's a key part of this, is working on this. UTS has put some money in as part of an action research project around the development of these sorts of techniques and technologies. And funds have come in from the Human Rights Commission and elsewhere. I want to get this going back to the right size, but I won't do it at the moment. Okay. Anyway, there are a whole series of resources and so on built into this, articles, etc. We're starting to build a group of bloggers who will blog various issues. Noor Dardos, wife, is one of them. And over the next few months, we'll be building a broad variety of people from a range of different communities who are interested in blogging not only about their own community backgrounds and issues, but about other issues. It's also becoming a clearinghouse for articles and material produced by academics around the country. We've got something like 150 academics on our list who are currently being inveigled in some way or another into contributing their grey papers and post papers to the project. And there are a whole series of forums. It also has a Facebook function, but it doesn't have the Facebook problem of Facebook actually owning all this stuff. So people can become registered users of the site, create groups, and do all the Facebook things within these groups. So, for instance, the point that Jim made about governments wanting to have communication with particular groups, these groups can form, they can have conversations which are private, they don't get exposed to anybody else. Anyone can visit the site, but in order to do anything on the site, you have to be a registered user. Every registered user's bona fides are being checked, so it's not a fully publicly accessible, hit it with whatever you want site. There is a very clear user code of conduct, flaming, bad language, etc., etc., and particularly religious and racial epithets are verboten. You just get locked out if you do that. We're not worried about people's grammar or their spelling. We're happy about any grammatical forms, any spelling, but the issues of respectful interaction, I guess, is where we want to go with it. How am I going for time?
10 minutes.
Okay, cool. Okay, yes, so just going to go back to the themes then briefly. We're currently looking at five themes. These themes are in a sense pathways into particular community building opportunities. So there's one around human rights, which is the most developed, and that's got all sorts of stuff where we link in the media stuff to news, to blogging, to research articles, to online articles you can comment on. We're currently in negotiations with a number of arts organisations about setting up an arts portal, because basically since the Australian Council killed the Multicultural Arts Committee a couple of years ago, there is in fact no national framework for any conversation about cultural diversity in the arts, and there's huge interest in that in arts organisations from Perth to South Australia, all over the Melbourne and Queensland and so on. And Kultur, which is the national multicultural arts touring organisation, has indicated would really like to take a serious role in running the whole arts dimension to this. In terms of justice, there's a whole access to civil justice issue, but also there are some people involved in, particularly in judicial training, who are very interested in using this as a site to develop interaction with judges and magistrates and so on around questions of civil justice and diversity, a space for various sorts of agencies and so on to develop their work, and a research environment which is primarily geared towards academic researchers in the field who can use that site to develop research communities, to share research, to put out proposals for collaboration, to interact with NGOs who want to have partner researchers, and so on. So it's a sort of variety of different functionalities built into it. And you can see the sorts of dynamic that we're looking to create with it. Many of them, in fact, deal with exactly the sorts of problems that that Jim was referring to. And the person who sits behind this from the creative side is the social informatics person who is on Nick Gruen's committee, in fact. Lisa Harvey, who has been one of the most dynamic web developer for people in relationship to community organisations. So if you think of GetUp as primarily a political advocacy organisation, this actually has a very different sort of dimension to it, because it's basically saying this is a way of enabling communities to have their own conversations, develop their own sense of where they want to go with this, and when they're ready to break out of their communal spaces and make arguments, then that's where we're going to go with it. Harry Ockle, Australian Human Rights Commission, is extremely interested in the idea of using this as a consultative environment. We're still going backwards and forwards with them exactly over which the first one of these is going to be, but it will probably be their African human rights project. They've gone through a first round of consultations on that. The reports on that are currently being written. And we hope, if they agree, and we can work out exactly how we do it, that when they launch their report, one of the spaces in which the interaction and communal work can be done about how the report will be received and dealt with and people will engage with it will be through this site. Right. At the moment, it has limitations. It doesn't handle non-Latin scripts, though that indeed is one of the issues down the way. And probably the most difficult challenge, besides the intellectual ones about the site, is this whole question of disabled access. You may remember that the Australian Human Rights Commission has a disability commissioner, and they have said quite clearly that if this is not if this site is not accessible, this site will not be funded. And Web 2.0 is renowned for being an extremely inaccessible technology. So what we now have is a group, some of the people who are working with us on the technology, trying to work out how to crack this problem of ensuring disability access. That means everything that's really cool and opens and shuts and all image-based has to be fully accessible through a text-based browser. So that means that everything has to be, on the back end, has to be written so that when people put a browser on it, they actually know how to navigate around the site. There are issues about registration. You can't use all the automatic devices that are used in Web 2.0 for registering. Like, you know, when you see those, what do they call it? The CAPS, that CAPS thing where they put up squiggly...
Capture.
Yeah, capture.
No, chapter.
Chapter. What's it called?
Chapter.
Chapter. Chapter. Yeah. Chapter. Well, where they put up all those squiggly lines that were supposed to be letters and that only human beings can read. Right, and then you have to punch them in. Well, we can't use that. Right, so everything has got to be reworked, and we've got to rework our way around it, and nothing we provide can in any way be more complex for people with disabilities than it is for anyone else. And we're being monitored in this by the guy who brought the Sydney Olympics to its knees in the year 2000 over the question of disability access to their website. So it's a very interesting experience of actually trying to work all these things through. And Lisa Harvey, who runs the company Energetica, who is actually doing the design work on this, is arguing that this particular experiment is exactly the sort of problem that the government's Web 2.0 committee is going to have to come to grips with. That's just a still of the front page, but basically it's got a running sequence of events, so users can feed in events. We're trying to keep it up to date at the moment, but again, as the user base expands, We expect this to be a national database of continuing events around cultural diversity. And even in the short time we've had it, people have said, there is so much going on, but I never knew that. Right? So there's this sense of an emerging community just to people who are aware that there's much more going on than their isolated sense of themselves. Might suggest. There's a running series of things around news reports, and in fact the Human Rights Consultation Online was our first, is our current first news item. And so it goes. Okay. We're now moving into a situation of trying to think about evaluation of this whole thing as it gets going. The actual site launch we think will be probably late October, but it'll be live, hopefully properly live by the end of September. We're looking at how to build an action research approach into this, and I think I'll be happily talking to Jim and the team that will be working on that to see whether there's some synergies there where we can put together some research around users and their engagement with this sort of stuff. We're very interested in the way in which people will naturally build communities. We're interested in what does that natural mean, how will it actually go. We're interested in what people actually use, what stuff will they find really just too hard, too boring, not effective, not easy to use, and what will they find really challenging. Will they actually want to be part of it, and what will they see as the benefit? And we're also particularly interested in sympathising with the third sector stuff about how this sort of stuff might build what people talk about as bridging social capital. That is, will it actually open up links between individuals and groups that weren't previously there, and how will those links actually emerge? So one of the issues we're currently having to come to grips with is how to design the evaluation strategy that will fit in with this whole exercise. Okay, so that's the story, and we expect to see all of you signing up to become registered users at the time the call goes out. Thank you.
Thank you.